We're excited about that, but she won't be able to join me for the show, so I'm flying solo today. I will get to as many calls and questions as I can. We should be doing 2 hours. Questions are starting to roll in pretty heavy already. So if you want to get in, I would press 1 on your phone as soon as possible. Here we go. Let's get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is Destination Health. Normally, I'm joined by my co-host, Kim Cockerham. She's traveling today, so I'll be flying solo. I'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything health. Diet, nutrition, fitness, lifestyle, training, exercise, drugs, supplements, disease, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and make the call, ask the question. I'll be getting to those questions in a little bit. Our show is primarily about business, and health is a huge part of business. We don't think of it that way, but the more deeply I get involved in the health side, the more benefits I see to my business. So I'm excited about that, and it really is a good fit. Now, Kim and I have been doing a lot of direct mentoring with our clients. We have three programs where we work directly with people, two-on-one. Kim and I do the majority of this together. Kim does a lot of the information gathering with the clients on her own, but we always do the mentoring calls together. And we've been doing this for a while now. We have three programs where you can get direct mentoring from both Kim and I. Those are the Gold and Silver Highway programs and the Health Gauges Pro. So if you are interested in getting more intensive one-on-one, take a look at those programs. You can find them on the website, letstruck.com, under the Health tab and Health Plans. We also do the free NutriQ, and we have done thousands and thousands of those. Throughout all this two-on-one, this direct mentoring, all the NutriQs we've done, we've really identified some very clear patterns with truck drivers specifically. Now, again, these are all patterns we do see in the general population, but we are finding that these are clear patterns and problems with truck drivers specifically. And once you understand these problems, it's pretty clear why the trucking lifestyle creates this more so than in the general population. What we're seeing when we do the NutriQ, and the NutriQ really prioritizes all the systems of the body and tells us exactly where the problems are, and then we can redo the NutriQ and make sure we're on the right track. It's an awesome tool. We do the NutriQ free. If you get through on the air, I'll actually go over your results with you. If not, we send you kind of some very short, limited recommendations as part of the free program, and then you can always upgrade to one of the paid programs for more intense, personalized recommendations. Again, same place, just go to the Health Plans tab in letstruck.com and you'll see the free NutriQ there. Here are two of the issues we're seeing. Well, let me start with another one. High blood sugar is always a problem with truck drivers. Very, very seldom are we finding anybody that doesn't have a blood sugar control issue. It's pretty rare. We do find some, but it's less than 5%. And again, the general population has a real problem with blood sugar control because of our diet primarily, but we're learning more and more about how lifestyle impacts this as well. And it's fairly complicated, but I want to simplify it because we don't need to understand all of the science behind it. We just need to know that it is a factor, a big factor. And I want to give you some ideas on how you can address that. Two areas that we're seeing that people are struggling with. We talk about how important digestion is. It's like the first step in everything our body does, because nutrition really is the key to most of this. We are going to talk about lifestyle, but nutrition even has an impact on that. This is such a circular reasoning. So our diet affects our gut bacteria. Our gut bacteria affects our neurotransmitters, which affect our mood. And our mood is a big part of the lifestyle I'm talking about, the stress response. So we talk about diet and lifestyle many times as being separate, but they're not. Our diet affects our mood and our emotions, which affect the neurotransmitters, which it's all wrapped up together. So digestion is first, always. We have to fix digestion. And when we fix digestion, we see many of the other problems start to resolve themselves as long as we have good nutrition. So I don't think I need to keep saying diet is critical. Diet is really step one, because we have to have the nutrients in the diet, but then we have to be able to digest them properly. Then the other problems start to resolve, and sometimes what's left are some more lifestyle issues, but we need to start here. One of the stumbling blocks we're seeing is some people, and I would say maybe 15% of the clients we're working with directly are not responding to what we've been doing on the digestive side. About 85%, you know, we use some HCL, some beta plus, which is bile salts. So we get, you know, good protein digestion in the stomach with good strong stomach acid. We get good fat digestion with the maybe a jump start of the bile salts. Throw in some other digestive enzymes. That really helps about 85% of the people. If you also understand digestion and how your mood affects it, and you really start paying attention, you eat your meals in a very calm, relaxed state, not while you're doing something else, you chew properly, these things go a long way. And for most people, they will fix digestion. But we ran into about 15% of the people who just don't seem to be responding. We've tried multiple supplements, doesn't seem to change anything. And I think what we're seeing with these people is SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And remember, digestion is a north to south process, and every step of the process depends on the prior steps to work properly. So if you disrupt the process high up, everything else is compromised. SIBO happens in your small intestine, which is fairly far up in the process. We have the stomach, then liver, gallbladder, then we're into the small intestine. And the problem here is we have bacterial overgrowth. We really shouldn't have a lot of bacteria in the small intestine. It belongs in the large intestine. So it doesn't even matter whether it's good or bad bacteria. It doesn't belong there, and it causes problems. And because it's a north to south process, it compromises the rest of the digestive tract, which has a lot to do with the neurotransmitters, the immune system, so many other things going on after this step. So I am actually, this is become enough of a challenge that I am taking an additional course right now through the Cresser Institute just on SIBO alone. I have a pretty good understanding of SIBO, but because we're seeing some challenging cases, I'm going to really do a deep dive into SIBO, and we're going to put together a stronger protocol. We have a protocol now. I've got some ideas. I'm going to go through this training, and we are going to come up with a stronger protocol on SIBO. I may talk about SIBO a little bit more in the next episode, because what there's something else I want to talk about in this episode. And the other problem that we're seeing, a real challenge with truck drivers, is what's technically referred to as HPA axis dysfunction. But more people will recognize the term adrenal fatigue. Adrenal fatigue isn't really correct because there's a lot more involved than just the adrenals. It's the hypothalamus, the pituitary, and the adrenals. That's the HPA axis. All of these glands and organs working together to control the hormones in the body. And the hormones are incredibly powerful. And this can, we could get really nerdy on this and put on our propeller hats, but I don't want to do that. I want to keep this very understandable. But this is really a critical part of what we're seeing. And now that I understand it more and I understand the lifestyle that truck drivers are living, it's no wonder why this is such a problem. I'm going to get to a break. We're going to come back and talk more about that. There's some exciting news around this. And then we're going to get to your calls and questions. Stick with me. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim has got the day off. She's traveling today. She's actually on her way out here, so we're excited about that. I am talking about HPA axis dysfunction. But from now on, I'm going to refer to it as adrenal fatigue. It's not correct technically, but people recognize it. When we're talking about adrenal fatigue, what we're really talking about is overactivation of the body's fight or flight response. And there are lots of ways that can happen. And I think that's one of the problems is most people don't understand how often and how many ways that fight or flight response can be triggered. Evolutionary, when we look at our evolution, this was a critically important function in our body. It kept us alive. The fight or flight response is the reason we're here today. Without this, we would have died off a long time ago. So what happens in the fight or flight response is when the brain recognizes a danger, and typically it should be a real danger, something that could kill you. When it recognizes that, it shuts down all unnecessary functions in the body. If it's not critical to keep you alive right this minute or this second, that function gets shut down and the body ramps up the systems that will keep you alive. Heartbeat, respiration, it releases chemicals, adrenaline and other chemicals, and converts glucose to energy quickly. And the idea is to funnel all the available energy into either fighting off the danger or fleeing from the danger and staying alive. So digestion, because we talked about digestion earlier, uses a tremendous amount of energy. It's very hard on our body to digest food. That could be a whole episode in and of itself, and we'll do one of those. But just know right now that to digest food requires a lot of energy. And if you just ate a meal and you are in a life-endangering situation, it's not really critical for you to digest that food right this minute. So the body will shut down digestion completely so it can convert that energy to staying alive. That's excellent. That's a really good system if we're truly in danger. The problem with today's lifestyle is that it's not all that often that we're really in a dangerous situation where we could die. That doesn't happen very often in our world today. We're pretty safe for the most part. If it does happen, the last thing you would want to be in is adrenal fatigue because you wouldn't have those reserves, but it doesn't happen very often. So earlier I used the term real danger. The problem we face today isn't real danger most of the time. It's perceived danger. The body doesn't know the difference. And we have gotten to the point where we are in the fight or flight mode way too often. And anything that stresses the body can cause this. So we typically think of emotional stress when we think of this, but that's only one piece. Physical stress, too much physical exertion for too long a period of a time will really tax the adrenals and the rest of the axis. So we see this a lot in endurance athletes. Many times, bodybuilders, power lifters, endurance athletes, people who are doing a lot of training in any kind of sport because they're not giving themselves enough recovery time. It's amazing how much we've learned about that recovery time and how long it should really be. There was a long time I owned a gym and I coached a lot of both power lifters and bodybuilders. And we believed that all we had to do was give that muscle group enough rest. So I had developed a 6-day workout for both bodybuilders and power lifters where we had 3 totally different workouts where we would hit 3 different muscle groups. So you were giving each muscle group almost 72 hours rest, which I thought was plenty. Well, it was plenty for the muscle itself. But that kind of intense training 6 days a week was not allowing the entire nervous system to recover. That was something we didn't understand, that not just the muscle needs time to recover. So you could stagger your workouts all you want and give that muscle group time, but if you weren't giving the entire body time to recover, you were still overtraining. With truck drivers, when we look at all of the things that could stress their nervous system, food can do it. Food sensitivities can do it. That's why we include the FIT test in our GOLD program, because we see a lot of food sensitivities, which comes back to the gut and the digestive system. So we have to fix that. Food toxins, food additives, all of those things can be very hard on the adrenal system. MSG, you know, we've known about the dangers of MSG forever, but most people didn't understand it. MSG is an excitotoxin. It ramps up the nervous system. Pollutants in the air and toxins in our environment, those are all stressors on the body. Eating itself, digestion is a stressor on the body. Then we do have the emotional stress that we talk about, that being in that fight or flight mode, even when we're not really in danger, traffic causes the fight or flight response. Waiting in line at a shipper or receiver, knowing that your 14-hour clock is winding down, and all of the things that go along with that cause a lot of stress. Here's another big one for truck drivers. Poor sleep cycles and poor sleep quality is a huge stressor on the immune system and on the hormonal system. I can't think of many occupations that affect sleep in a negative way more so than truck driving. team driving is the absolute worst. And we've seen a clear pattern with our team drivers with just total adrenal fatigue that we can't seem to fix. Nutrition doesn't do it. Supplements aren't doing it. We have to address this from a lifestyle perspective. And there's some good news around that. But before I get to that, I want to talk about and make sure you're clear on all the things that can cause this. Because some people say, oh, no, I don't worry about things. I don't get anxious. And a lot of people don't. I'm one of them. I don't worry about things. Even if something gets me really upset, 5 minutes later, it's gone. I move past it quickly. And yet there are times when I find myself in complete adrenal fatigue. I just experienced it this week, pushed my body way past the limits, mostly physical, but also a lot of mental exertion, doing a lot of writing, which is really stressful for me, working on creative projects, which I love doing, but it's still stressful. It puts my body into that sympathetic mode. When we talk about sympathetic or parasympathetic, when we're in the sympathetic mode, that's the fight or flight mode. When we're in the parasympathetic, that's the rest and repair mode. We want to spend a lot more time in that rest and repair mode. Now, I was actually monitoring this and I saw it coming. I'm going to talk about how I monitored it. I saw it coming. And I continued to push through it because I had things that had to get done. They were deadlines. At some point, your body will force you to stop, but you should never get to that point. And I did this week. In fact, it happened yesterday. I got up somewhat late for me, which is about 6 a.m. I tend to get up between 4:30 and 5. I got up at 6, felt really groggy and didn't really want to wake up, but I knew I needed to get started in the day. Drank a big cup of bulletproof coffee, which usually gets me going, lots of energy. And not 15 minutes after I finished the cup of coffee, I was on the couch, sound asleep again. That never happens to me. I had to get up and do the show yesterday. I only did 1 hour because I just couldn't even think about doing two, and went back and laid down on the couch. I ended up sleeping almost 12 hours. I just couldn't stay awake yesterday. No energy when I was awake. The interesting thing, if I go look at my readings, which I'll talk about in a minute, I was clearly at the point of exhaustion and my body forced me to fix the problem. But we don't want to get there. We want to stay in that place where we're rested and recovered in between those times when we really need to push. So I'm not saying we should all hang out at the beach in Zen mode all the time. That wouldn't be good for us either. But we need to find that balance. And most truck drivers are way out of balance because of their lifestyle. The good news is I've got some ideas and I'm on a mission. We're going to solve this. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. I'm talking about adrenal fatigue. So those are the things that can cause this. Any stressor to the body, emotional stress, physical stress, the stress of toxins, the stress of food sensitivities. We could go on and on. The stress of poor quality sleep, lack of sleep, not a consistent sleep cycle. The stress of loneliness, of not feeling connected to other people, the stress of not feeling like you have a purpose in life. you run down this list and you start to see truck drivers are screwed. If we don't change things pretty drastically, we'll never solve this problem. The good news is all of these things can be addressed. And even the ones I thought were going to be a really big challenge, there's some really exciting new technologies and devices and all kinds of things. And I'm working on a very comprehensive package specifically for truck drivers around this. So you're going to be hearing a lot more about this. I was talking about my own experience and the fact that I saw it coming. And I did that because I'm testing a brand new device, just hit the market. I just got mine less than a week ago, and some software that goes along with it. And it's designed to measure your heart rate variability. Heart rate variability is a fairly new area, still a little controversial, really. It's primarily used by elite athletes, endurance athletes looking for that edge, because what it shows them is it shows them recovery. So if they measure heart rate variability, they'll know exactly when they're recovered and they can go back and train again so they can get in maximum training time without overtraining. Because once you overtrain, you're just wasting your time. So, you know, there's a lot at stake when you get up to the higher levels of elite athletes. And they were willing to pay for this technology and the interpretation and everything that went along with it. And it was really kind of out of reach for just everyday health. But I've been doing a tremendous amount of research on heart rate variability and how it can show overall health, mental health, stress levels, food sensitivities. There is so much we can read from heart rate variability. And now we have a fairly inexpensive device, less than $200, and some really inexpensive software, about 10 bucks, that can use heart rate variability every day to help us manage this giant problem of adrenal fatigue. So I'm really excited about that. I'm still in the early testing stages. Like I say, I just got my device less than a week ago. I plan on doing at least 30 days worth of testing with myself, and I have some other people. We're going to test several different scenarios, and we'll come out with a recommendation on which device, which software, those kind of things. But I think this holds a lot of promise. I'm also looking at some new devices on the market around sleep, because we do have to solve that sleep issue. And for drivers, there are some pretty unique things we've got to address. The good news is I am on a mission. These are probably the last two pieces in the puzzle for our really problem cases. And I want to make sure we can help those people. But this is also going to benefit everybody. No matter how healthy you believe you are, if you're suffering any level of adrenal fatigue or sleep problems or gut issues, we'll talk about that probably more in the next episode. No matter how healthy you are, these things can improve that and take you to the next level. If you're stuck and you're not seeing the results we talk about, this is most likely one of the problems that you're facing. So we're going to continue working on this. You're going to hear a lot more about it. I am going to get to the calls and questions. Let's start off in Michigan. George, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Kevin. Hey, just a quick whatever here for everybody. Last night I spent the night at a different place from where I normally do in Michigan. And got out and swept out swept the trailer a little bit, did some securing stuff. And anyways, walking around, I didn't even go off in the tall grass, just in the short grass that had been mowed recently. I discovered three ticks crawling around on me last night. I just kind of wanted to let everybody know it is that time of the year. Be careful out here. But what I called about is my wife has just been given a heads up by her optometrist. she has beginning stages of getting cataracts, and what I want to know is if there's anything nutritionally that we can do to prevent that from getting worse.
Absolutely. Let me ask you a couple questions first. How old is your wife?
52.
Okay. So one of the causes is aging, but it shouldn't be. After 40, cataracts are a lot more common, but that's only because that's after decades of a poor diet. If we ate a good diet all our life, we just wouldn't have cataracts. They are clearly a lifestyle issue in about 99% of the cases. It's just poor nutrition our whole life, and that's why we tend to get it as we get older. The good news is that it can be reversed. At the very least, it can be halted, so we don't do any more damage. Now, the answer in the medical community, like everything else, tends to be surgery.
Right.
I guess the good news is, because we have that surgery, you don't have to really worry about going blind. I mean, as long as we catch this, the surgery could fix it. I'm just not a big fan of that. That's pretty radical in my opinion. So I would much rather see we look to nutrition, which is what you're asking. So what you're really looking for when we talk about cataracts and preventing them, you're looking for foods that are high in antioxidants to begin with. So foods that are high in vitamin E and vitamin C. Those are two of our big antioxidants. One of the other antioxidant things that we can do that, sounds a little weird, but it's actually pretty powerful, is getting outside in your bare feet. Getting shoes off and getting outside in grass, in sand, in water, if you're anywhere near the ocean. Grounding. Yeah, absolutely. That's the term for it. That creates antioxidants naturally in our body. So that's one way. Foods that are high in antioxidants, vitamin E and C. And another really important nutrient for eyesight is vitamin A. Now, we always hear about, orange vegetables, carrots, and, sweet potatoes, those kind of things. They're okay, but they don't really contain, they don't contain any real vitamin A. They contain beta carotene, which our body has to convert to vitamin A. And in order for our body to do that, a lot of other things have to be right. Our digestion has to be right. We have to have all the other cofactors involved. It's much better to get the real form of vitamin A and not make our body try to convert it. By far, off the charts in vitamin A is beef liver. In fact, it is so high in vitamin A, there are some people that claim you should be careful how often you eat it because you could get vitamin A toxicity. I'm not so sure I believe that. There is a lot of evidence that you could get toxicity from artificial vitamin A, from a supplement, but there seems to be a lot of evidence that if it's the natural form of vitamin A from foods, that it's not toxic. And the odds of somebody eating that much liver are probably pretty slim, so I don't worry about it. But if you were to add beef liver in any form, the less cooked, the better, lightly cooked, twice a week, that would be more vitamin A than you would need. Once a week would probably be enough. So nutrition-wise, I would focus on those areas. And I would really try to get it from food. You could also look at foods like that are high in zinc, which again, grass-fed beef. Grass-fed, not conventionally fed, but grass-fed beef is high in zinc. There are a couple other things, lutein, omega-3 rich foods are good for this. So really, it comes down to the same kinds of foods we always talk about, those nutrient-dense whole foods. So let me, music's playing, let me get to a break. We'll come back, we'll see if that helped, and if I've answered your question, and then we'll get to some more questions. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with George in Michigan. So, George, if she were to eat beef liver once a week, and I would add, as long as she likes this, I would add a good quality canned seafood a couple times a week. Salmon, sardines, tuna, good quality, clean. Here's a recipe that would really work well, because not only would we get the really good omega-3s, but we would get a high vitamin C. And I eat this once a week. So take any of those three canned fish I talked about. Sardines are the best, really, the most nutrient dense. Salmon is probably second. Tuna would be third. But any combination of those, or any one of those, and make like a tuna salad. You know, a little high-quality mayonnaise, the really good stuff, any seasonings or spices that you like, you know, chop up some vegetables, onions, garlic, those kind of things. Cilantro, make a salad out of it, and then eat that salad on a slice of red pepper. Red pepper is extremely high in vitamin C, much higher than oranges or all those other things we think are high in vitamin C. And it's just a great, satisfying meal with a lot of nutrients.
Okay. Yeah, we do. I do sardines fairly often. I carry them in the truck here with me, along with the salmon. Actually, I'm not sure if it's salmon or tuna I have back here, but it's one of the higher quality ones. We're going to have a hard time getting her to eat beef liver, but we'll try to hide that somehow or another. Maybe.
No, if.
Mix it up with ground beef.
Mix it with ground beef, put it in recipes like chili, heavily seasoned recipes will tend to hide it. And if that doesn't work, go to desiccated liver. Desiccated liver is a good second to raw liver. It's basically kind of freeze-dried. It does retain a lot of the nutrient value. And if somebody just can't stomach liver, you could also look at chicken liver and doing things like chicken liver pate. It's a lot more mild than beef liver, not as high in nutrition, but still very nutritious, more so than most foods. So there's a couple strategies there. Let's head off to Indiana. Jessica, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. I have a lot to ask you today, and I'm going to try to make it as quick as I possibly can.
Okay.
First of all, I have a question about the difference between exogenous versus endogenous ketones. It's in the fact that, you know, when like Keto OS and those types of products, I had a friend that was actually looking into start selling Keto OS. And so I was kind of playing the idiot and started asking her questions about how taking the Keto OS, how you need to change your diet, that sort of thing. Again, knowing what I know about ketosis and knowing what I know about the ketones and your body's ability to naturally produce them, I was just trying to see, you know, kind of what she knew.
Right.
As it turned out, she actually referred me to her upline. And her upline said that you didn't have to change your diet at all. You could continue eating the SAD diet and still take exogenous ketones.
Oh.
So then I asked Michael about that, you know, your son. I asked him, I was like, okay, this isn't making sense to me. Because I know that, you know, if ketone levels go up, and let's say that some person who does not know very much follows their advice and goes and eats a dozen donuts and then says, hey, I can still get all of the getting my body going correctly by taking some Keto OS and being able to go work out. I mean, having a high amount of sugar and then having high exogenous ketones, that's dangerous.
It's a really bad idea for so many reasons. So let's start at the very beginning. you know, one of the places I do a lot of research or listen to get a lot of my information is Dave Asprey, because he does so much research, so in depth. I don't agree with everything he talks about. He goes to the extremes in some cases, but he really connects with some people that have been deep into this. So when he's big on ketones, obviously, he's big on being in ketosis, and he brought in, and I forget the guy's name. I'd have to go back and look at my notes, but the guy's been researching this for like 30 years. I mean, he was so deep into the science, and Dave has been also, and according to Dave, forget whether or not they're even good for you, exogenous ketones. I don't believe that they are. The problem was, according to him, you can't produce these things. I mean, he said it would take $30,000 with today's technology to produce true exogenous ketones that would do any good. He's tried. He spent a lot of money trying to develop them. And the researcher he had on, the scientist, said the same thing, that he's been working on this forever, and it's just not practical. So these products that are on the market, they may be increasing ketone readings. I don't know. But I still, and as you probably know, they're outrageously expensive. So that's a big downside for me. But the real problem comes in, yes, we do want ketones. Ketones are just another form of energy. That's all it really is. There's nothing magical about them. They're a form of energy. So they are important. But what's more important is why our body is producing them in the first place. That's what we're trying to get to. We're trying to get to the stage that our body produces these ketones, because at that point we know our body is now capable of burning fat for energy. It takes the fat, converts it to ketones, and we use it for energy. That creates the whole fat burning process, which is important. We want to burn off the excess fat. We don't want to have all this body fat because it causes problems. So to me, and the research, if these ketones, these exogenous ketones, and for the people who don't know, exogenous means they came from outside of our body. We consumed them. Endogenous means our body produced them, which is what we want. So if we take in these extra ketones, it's like having a full tank of gas and trying to take on more. That doesn't make any sense. If you've already got all this fat on your body, let's use it. Let's burn it up and make ketones out of it. And then once we burn off all the excess fat, well, then that's why we eat a high-fat diet, so that our body has the fat to turn into ketones for the energy and the brain clarity and all the other benefits. So taking them makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. And taking them and telling people, oh, eat whatever you want because now you're producing ketones, that's just dumb. This is one of the problems I have with almost any company that uses the whole multi-level marketing thing. I've even found some products that I actually liked, but I stayed away from because they use this model. Because you get people down the entire line who don't know what the hell they're talking about, and they just keep repeating what they were told to say just to sell stuff.
And my concern was because this person was in our church, and our church obviously has a lot of elderly people and a lot of other people that don't know as much as even I do, and I don't know a whole lot. But I mean, you know, then for them to get these products, I mean, I was just really worried about everybody's health. And so I literally got very adamant with this person, and I was like, this is ridiculous. You shouldn't be involved in this unless you actually know what it is that you're selling, know the purpose behind it. Unless you know something about nutrition, you don't need to be doing this, because that's too dangerous with other people's health.
Yeah, and in this case, they actually learned all those things you just said they should know, and you're absolutely correct. They would stop selling this stuff and talking about it because these products make no sense.
Absolutely true. But, okay, on to point number two. This time around, which, you know, it's the third time for Chris and I, and we've really been doing as good as we possibly can out here. And I know that I have a lot to work on as far as stress levels and everything. And we've been trying to deal with what we thought was probably a leaky gut on both of our cases by starting to actually doing that, adding licorice and L-glutamine and things like that. We were able, now I've actually gotten fat adapted, which is absolutely wonderful.
Oh, good. That's exciting.
But Chris is having, Estelle hasn't hit that part, and he's actually having a lot of problems with acne. Skin is really, really oily, and I don't know what to suggest.
Interesting. So this is good timing because we're coming up on the end of the show, but in my next episode, we're going to talk about SIBO. And here's the interesting thing. I have a research paper that showed 100% correlation, 100% between acne, rosacea, and those two are kind of interrelated, and SIBO, 100% correlation. So I'm going to bring you back on the next show, and we're going to talk about that because it fits the topic perfectly. So I've got to get out of here. We're all out of time. We will do it again next show. Thanks for joining me. Remember, eat real food. Sleep like a baby. Connect like you mean it. Move like your life depended on it. And remember, a healthy person has hundreds of wishes. A sick person has only one. Stay healthy, my friends. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, hang on. We're going to do a second episode, and I'm going to get to a lot of your calls and questions this time. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is Destination Health. My co-host Kim Cockerham is off today. She's traveling, actually on her way here. I'm excited about that. We have some projects we're going to be working on while she's here. So I'm flying solo today, and we're going to get to your calls and questions in a little bit. On today's show, we'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything health, fitness, nutrition, food, diet, exercise, supplements, drugs, disease, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and ask. And of course, we'll wrap it all around the trucking lifestyle. We're going to get to those calls in a little bit. I have an update from the last show. I had a question about exogenous ketones, ketones that you take in as a supplement. And I have an update, came from my son, Michael. He does a lot of research in this area as well. And I talked about Dave Asprey and all the time he's tried to produce these. And it turns out that these products are producing ketones. If you take these products, you will measure increased ketones in your body. There's several problems with that. One, I mentioned that the whole point for me is not to have the ketones, it's to get my body to produce them. But Dave also talks about the fact that they can produce these exogenous ketones, but the manufacturing process creates a lot of unwanted byproducts. That's why he hasn't released a product that does this. It's just not worth it. These other companies, who knows why they're doing it? There's just so many reasons to avoid these products. They're outrageously expensive. They do have the unwanted byproducts, and they are missing the point completely, in my opinion. If they ever perfect this process, I would still only see this as a supplement for somebody who could really benefit from extra ketones, you know, elite athletes, or, you know, otherwise the point is to get your body to produce these on its own. And that's another show, but I wanted to give you an update on that. I also had a question at the end of the show, same question actually, where we were talking about some symptoms, and acne came up, which was a very good fit for my topic for today's show, which is SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So in English, we talk a lot about gut bacteria, good bacteria versus bad bacteria. One of the other things that can happen, though, is your gut bacteria should primarily live in your large intestine. When it migrates up to your small intestine, and there are several reasons this can happen, it doesn't even matter anymore whether it's good bacteria or bad. It's going to cause a problem, and it's very hard to get rid of. The medical approach, and we can test for this, by the way. We can do a breath test. There are even some problems with that test, though. I'm going to be doing a webinar on this topic where I can dive deeper into the science behind it. So I'm not going to get too deep into it right now, but we can test for this. There is a medical test. The standard medical procedure is antibiotics. It will kill the bacteria, some of them. There are some bacteria that can be a part of SIBO that aren't affected by the antibiotics and the drugs we're using. But the antibiotics create as many or more problems than they solved, because they wipe out all the bacteria in our small intestine, in our large intestine, good bacteria, bad bacteria. And many times after the bacteria are killed off, the bad bacteria tend to repopulate faster. So I'm not a fan of antibiotics for SIBO at all. The good news is there are some natural treatments. Now, this is one of the more difficult things to treat, but we're developing better and better protocols all the time. I am taking a pretty intensive training course on SIBO right now with all the newest information on diagnosing and treating SIBO naturally. So we will be releasing our new protocol for this probably within the next 30 days or so. And we have some mentoring clients that we will be using as guinea pigs, because this is a problem we've been struggling with about 15% of our one-on-one mentoring clients. So I'm excited that we've got some new tools in the arsenal for this. So I am going to go back to Jessica, who I was talking to on the last show on this topic. So, Jessica, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
So, just to kind of catch people up, you and your husband have been working on, you know, a lot of this, the ketogenic diet. You got fat adapted, which is awesome. Glad to hear that. That's exciting. And you were saying he was struggling with some issues, and we think there are some digestive things going on still. And then you mentioned acne, which made my ears perk up, because I mentioned in the last show, I have a research paper that I just read recently that showed a 100% correlation. That's almost unheard of. 100% correlation between acne / rosacea and SIBO. And about an 85% success rate eliminating the acne and the rosacea by clearing up the SIBO, which those are awesome numbers. I mean, very seldom do we ever see that kind of strong correlation and that kind of fix to the problem. So my guess would be there is a very, very high likelihood that he's got SIBO.
And we were, that was one thing that I was kind of struggling with. I wasn't sure whether it was SIBO or leaky gut, because some of the things for the two are so similar that I was like trying to figure out which one. And I thought, well, maybe if we had dealt with the leaky gut first, then maybe we'd be able to figure out and get to the bottom of it. And through dealing with the leaky gut, you know, by adding the different supplements for that, that was when the acne actually showed up. And so I may have caused this by trying to deal with a problem that wasn't really, I mean, I don't know.
No, I'll tell you what happened. You were on the right track. you only got one thing wrong, and that was the order. SIBO and leaky gut, they go hand in hand. They're both digestive disorders, and in the last episode, I talked a little bit about this. Digestion is a very clear north-to-south process, and any compromise affects everything after it. SIBO is in the small intestine. Leaky gut happens to be beyond that, in the small intestine and beyond. So you're on the absolute right track. There is a very high likelihood that he has both, but we have to address the SIBO first. That was the only thing you got wrong. You were absolutely on the right track with this. And we can address them both at the same time. But if we don't address the SIBO, which is harder to deal with, we're probably not going to see much progress with the leaky gut. And some of the things we can do to treat leaky gut can actually make the SIBO worse. So we have to watch out for things like that. So there are some really good protocols that you can find online on your own for SIBO. And, mm-hmm. and I would start following some of those. Like I say, this is a really big project for me. We're going to come out with a new updated protocol within 30 days. But I wouldn't wait for that. You know, you're good at research. I would go online. I would find some of the strategies to address this. And it's mostly eliminating the foods that can make it worse and really focusing on a lot of herbal, antimicrobial, antibacterials. So we're looking for the nutrients, the foods that contain things that naturally kill off bacteria. And there are lots of them. Oil of oregano. I mean, I could go on and on. But again, you can go do that research. And I would just give this a shot on your own for now.
Okay. And is there anything else? I mean, my last thing was going to be actually asking if there was anything that we needed to change. But since Kim's not there to kind of review the NutriQ with you, I wouldn't know if there was anything else that we needed to change as far as our supplementation, or if we should just kind of just keep on going and try to deal with his SIBO and then we'll kind of go from there. Do you think that would be good?
I would, because the digestive supplements we talk about for the most part are just going to be fine. We still want good, strong stomach acid, because that's our first line of defense against any bad bacteria or parasites that would certainly make the SIBO worse. So that's fine. If you're taking any kind of liver gallbladder support, that's good, because we're going to digest our fats, which we need all those nutrients. So yeah, I, without even looking at the NutriQ, I would say keep doing what you're doing and add in the SIBO protocol for him. And call me back, and even by next week, I'll have more information on this. I'm getting pretty close to finalizing our new protocol. So like I say, the very least, latest, I mean, it'll be within the next 30 days. Stick around. We'll be right back with more of your calls and questions. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. We're going to get right back to the calls. We're off to Oklahoma. Peter, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How you doing?
Doing great. What can I help you with today?
I had a couple questions. Now that I'm listening to you today, I'm learning something new about SIBO, and that's probably one of my main questions and maybe some of the problems I'm having with my keto diet. I've been listening to you for a long time. I'm trying to do everything to lose weight. I'm fit as a bull, but I have this beer belly. I can't get rid of this beer belly no matter what I do. But I know I've been off and on the diet with eating my breads. So I guess my question is, I've been, not to get graphic, I've been watching my stool to see how I'm doing, you know, as I'm dieting. And I keep hearing about this leaky gut. So I have my major question is, what is leaky gut? And I guess, what am I looking for if I have leaky gut?
So first off, let's go back to the diet, because here's one of the challenges and why people fail at this. You can do 90% of the work by eliminating, 90% of the problem foods and see almost no results. And that's very frustrating for people, because that's hard to do. It's a lot of work to change your diet by 90%, and yet you don't see any results. And some people do, but many people don't. And then they give up because they get frustrated and think, oh, well, this doesn't work. If you get to that 100, and I don't even mean forever. If you could get to that 100% for 30 days, everything changes. So that's the one thing I want to encourage you to keep working on the diet. Don't give up. And we're not perfect. But the closer you get, and you mentioned bread, and since we're talking about leaky gut, we have to talk about bread, because one of the biggest factors in leaky gut is gluten. Gluten is an absolute cause of leaky gut. There are other causes, but gluten is number one, and it's not just for people who have celiac disease or people who even show up on a food sensitivity test sensitive to gluten. It's everybody. Gluten wreaks havoc with our digestive system. So let's talk about what leaky gut is. So your digestive system is a big tube that runs all the way through your body, starting at your lips and ending at the other end. That's your digestive system. Technically, I know this seems weird, but technically the inside of your digestive system we consider the outside of your body. So imagine, a hollow tube running in between down something. So you have the outside of your body, then you have your body, then you have your digestive system. And technically, we want to keep that separate from the rest of your body, because we take in all kinds of substances that we don't want getting into our body. That's why we eliminate things. So the digestive system is a barrier to keep things that don't belong in our body from getting into our body, but it wants to extract the nutrients and get those into our body. Are you with me so far?
Yeah, I'm kind of getting it.
So the cells of the digestive system are like the guards, and they're very tight. So imagine trying to get through a line of guards that are standing shoulder to shoulder, and if you don't have the right password, you can't get through. That's a good, healthy digestive system. It lets the nutrients through and keeps out all the stuff we don't want. Parasites, proteins, particles of food, those things are not supposed to get out of the digestive system and into our body until our digestive system breaks them down into the right components and lets them through. Gluten and other foods can cause that barrier to loosen. So now, instead of the guard standing shoulder to shoulder and not letting anything through unless they allow it, now they start to stand apart from each other, and there's a gap, and things can sneak right through the gap. And that's leaky gut. That's what we're talking about, where the intestinal system now has holes in it, and it has gaps, and things get through that aren't supposed to get through. The reason that's a problem, because now there are things in your bloodstream that don't belong there, and our immune system is there to stop those things from harming us. So when you have leaky gut and all of these things keep getting through, our immune system becomes way overactive. It's ramped up, it's on guard all the time, and it starts attacking everything. And it even starts attacking our own body. And that's what we refer to as autoimmune diseases. And autoimmune diseases are exploding. There's many, many. I forget last time I looked, maybe 80 some now, that are considered autoimmune, all kinds of things from arthritis to Crohn's disease to ulcerative colitis, eczema, psoriasis, Hashimoto's, Graves' disease. I could go on and on and on and on. And all of these diseases are autoimmune. They are the body's immune system attacking itself. And they're, like I say, they're exploding because leaky gut is exploding because our diet is so poor and we have so much gluten in our diet these days. And there are other things, but gluten is the number one cause. Does that all help?
All right. Yo, it helps tremendously. Yeah, I believe, because I've been cheating like crazy. So I'm doing good, and I'll have a 6-inch Subway sandwich and all that bread, and I can feel a difference. I mean, I can tell right away that I shouldn't have done that. And it's just a little more willpower to stack the back of my head saying, don't eat that, you know.
So one of the things we do, it's part of our gold program, or you can order it separately. We do what's called a FIT test, a food inflammation test. And it tells us a couple things. One, it tells us that there are foods you are reacting negatively to and they're causing problems. So we would clearly want you to avoid those foods. And it could be all kinds of things.
Right.
I mean, I just saw somebody's yesterday that I actually saw beef show up. That was... Lisa pointed it out to me because she reviews all these as well, and she was as shocked as I was. Beef is a very non-reactive food, but it showed up on somebody's test. I've seen avocados. Healthy foods can show up. So there are two things it's telling us. One, the specific food we should avoid for now, but the other thing that it tells us is if we have a lot of foods on our list, we've got a pretty severe case of leaky gut. Because these foods should not be showing up in our bloodstream and we should not be reacting to them negatively. So when somebody has a really long list, not only do we have to avoid those foods for a while, but we have to work on leaky gut. That's a good sign that's what's going on. In the last show, I talked about some wearable devices that I'm testing right now. And one of the other ways that you can test for food sensitivities is what's called COCA's pulse test. And I put out a paper on this to show you how to do it yourself. You can do COCA's pulse test without any kind of device or software. But the wearable that I'm testing right now, among all the other things that it does, it has software built in to help you do COCA's pulse test without having to understand how to take your pulse and how long to wait and how to read the results. So pretty excited about that. Let's get to some more phone calls. Let's go to Oklahoma. Kenny, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call today.
What can I help you with?
I've been doing keto since October. And I'm actually down 70 pounds.
Oh, congratulations. That's outstanding.
Thank you. And one thing I'm trying to do, because I'm a fairly decent-sized guy. I mean, I was 6'4", 330, and now I'm down to 260. And I want to start trying to, like, I want to keep dropping a little bit of weight, but I want to start toning up and everything and getting, you know, getting some muscle tone back again. And I've started recently working out, and I'm just curious on exactly if I should make any changes to my diet at all. We've always been taught to maybe add more protein to build muscle, and I'm just kind of want to get your thought on that.
Yeah, my guess is if anything, you're probably eating more protein than what you need. We have so overblown the need for protein, even in people who are working out heavy. Now, you're a bigger guy, so you probably have more protein requirements. But while we're trying to lose weight, we don't want to overdo the protein at all. And for pure health reasons, we don't want to overdo the protein. Protein is awesome, does all kinds of great things, but we don't want more of it than what we need. So we could almost look at macronutrients in order. Carbohydrates we can do without almost completely. We don't need many of those at all. Doesn't mean we shouldn't eat the good ones, but we don't need many of those. Protein, we need a certain amount, but anything more than that can cause problems. It's why we do a high-fat diet, because of all the macronutrients, fat has the least, almost no negative consequences. So that's why we do high-fat, moderate protein. We'll come back and talk about your protein needs right after this. Stick around. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. This is Destination Health. I was talking with Kenny in Oklahoma. So, Kenny, are you measuring your food intake at all?
As far as you mean calories or macronutrients?
Macronutrients. I really don't care much about calories.
Okay. No, I am. I try to really stay really high on the fat, but you know, what I've done a little bit is instead of being 70% fat, 25-5, I've gone about 60%. I've gone like 65-35-5.
Yeah, I would switch
that. I don't know if that's too much or...
It all depends, but my guess is at that ratio, you're well over 100 grams of protein a day. And that can actually get in the way of some of the weight loss and blood sugar issues. If our body gets very low carbohydrates, which is good, that's what we want, but it gets an excess of protein, it will keep converting the protein to glucose. And we can still have the same blood sugar issues, and that can block weight loss. And it's just not necessary. I mean, I'm pretty sure you're not really, really working out hard. And even if you were, we probably still have enough protein. I would go back to the ratio you were on before. I think that's going to be a much better ratio for you. You're not going to have any trouble building muscle with that ratio.
Okay. That's what I was wondering. Just because, you know, back in the day, like I said, when you're playing football, they're telling you to, you know, take all this, you know, all this protein and everything. And in listening to you, I'm trying to balance in between the two and figure out which one I should actually be doing. So
we don't even have to go back in the day. You're right. They told us that forever. There are still a lot of people that believe that today, but the research just doesn't show it. We have way overdone the protein. Part of it is just our diet. When you look at ancestral diets, protein was fairly hard to come by and expensive. We have made protein really, really cheap in this country. So when you look at an ancestral diet, the meat was usually used as a flavoring. So you would take things like salt pork and ham hocks and, you know, you would use a little bit of it in a dish or a stew, mostly as a flavoring. Well, we're like the first society really that sits down to a 16-ounce porterhouse and makes it the center of the plate and throw in a couple potatoes and maybe a vegetable or a salad of iceberg lettuce. So even when it looks like that might be a fairly nutritious meal, if we skip the potatoes, it's really not. It's too much protein. It's too much of the nutrients that we get from the meat itself and not enough other nutrients because we're overdoing the meat. So in general, we tend to overdo meat in our diet. Then you get the protein powders and the drinks and the bars. And honestly, most of that is just a way to sell more products. We don't need all that stuff. We can get plenty of protein out of our diet, and still many people are getting too much.
Okay.
All right. Well, so congratulations again. Keep doing what you're doing. I would go back to the higher fat ratio. When you get down to your target weight, target blood sugar numbers, then we might adjust. But honestly, I don't think I would adjust protein. I would actually adjust some better carbs back in, more berries, maybe even a little bit of fruit, some of the starchy vegetables, but not until we get to that target weight and we get blood sugar numbers where we want them. The two nutrients we tend to alter more are fats and carbohydrates. Proteins, we don't have to play around with those too much, and most people are just getting too much of it. Let's go to Colorado. Les, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I heard you the other day or last week or sometime, speaking of fat and the diet, that I was talking about half and half, and you told him to lay off the stuff. Please explain why.
It's not so much that you have to lay off. It's not one of my favorite things in the diet, primarily because of the quality of it. Most of the half and half on the market is just garbage. The cows were raised on a horrible diet. It's either pasteurized or ultra pasteurized, which damages all of the enzymes. It's homogenized, which damages all of the fats. And lots of people are reactive to dairy products anyway. So there's so many negatives to most dairy products. Now, if you were getting local raw half and half and you didn't react to it, then it would probably be a great food to have in your diet. But that's not what people are doing.
Okay, what type of reactions are you talking about?
Well, dairy products can cause several. The most common are digestive reactions if you're lactose intolerant. So if your body can't digest lactose, which is about 60% of the adult population, then you're going to get digestive issues. You're going to alternate between constipation and diarrhea because your body can't digest that lactose. Even if you are lactose tolerant, if you're one of the 40% that can digest lactose, there's still a good chance you're going to react negatively to the protein, the casein that's in dairy. We see casein come up on our fit test very, very often. And that will cause symptoms that we don't even know, that we don't realize that's what's going on. It can cause immune system problems and other things. So it's one of the reasons if you look at, you know, the paleo community, the most argued topic in a paleo diet is whether or not you should be eating dairy. And I think the reason we argue about it so much is we don't want to get rid of it. I love dairy, cheese, yogurt, milk. I love those things. So, you know, we always want to justify why we can keep those in the diet. But in a true paleo diet, dairy wasn't really a part of how we evolved. When we were hunter-gatherers, you know, we didn't chase down a cow, and cows did exist in different. We didn't chase them down, you know, and milk them. We didn't start doing that until agriculture came about and we started to domesticate those kind of animals. And that was fairly recent. So it's not a part of our evolutionary diet, and our body really isn't adapted very well to dairy.
Well, you know, I've been doing that bulletproof coffee, and I'm using that Kerrygold, no salt, and a big old bunch of, or about an adequate amount of coconut oil. And I noticed that later in the day, I'll have like mucus.
So one of the that's probably reacting to the dairy, to the butter. And now I do put butter in mine because I've tested many, many times. I have no negative reactions to grass-fed butter. But if you are having it, I would switch to ghee, G-H-E-E. It is a clarified butter where all the lactose is gone and most of the casein, almost all of the casein is gone. So what's left are the good fats and the good nutrients. Ghee is a little more expensive because it is another step in the process. But if you are reacting, and it sounds like you are, to the butter, I would switch to ghee. Let's go to Minnesota. Rod, welcome to the program.
Hello. Hey, Kevin. Glad to talk to you. I'm learning a heck of a lot today. You're right on point to what I'm trying to figure out. But I think it's better if I listen to you. I'm learning more that way, so I'm going to narrow it down to one question. Me on a gut healing protocol with supplements and suggestions on what I should eat. And about three callers ago, like that fella says, man, it's hard to give up bread all the time. I catch myself eating a piece of bread and suffer the consequences. But I'm trying to do better, just like you're trying to suggest, trying to encourage us to. So if I keep going with my protocol, is there any harm to that?
No, none whatsoever. The gut healing diets, whether it's the GAP diet, which is one of the more popular gut healing. We have an autoimmune GAPS. There's several, and they're almost all elimination diets, meaning we eliminate all the foods that would cause the gut damage. They're also just very clean diets. So there's no harm whatsoever in sticking to one of these. Now, they're very restrictive. So most people, once we get the gut healing done, would prefer to start adding some of the other foods back in. And I'm going to get to a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about that right after this. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. This is Destination Health. I'm going to go back to Rod in Minnesota. So, Rod, to answer your question, no damage whatsoever. These are good, clean diets. But again, most people, once the gut healing is achieved, will start to add those foods back in. Kind of watch if there are foods we can identify that cause problems. Clearly, gluten is just, we eliminate that forever. We shouldn't be eating those things. But a lot of the other foods, once the healing is done, you can start to add them back into the diet.
I think I'm directed my question mostly to supplement now. None of these supplements in a long-term situation is going to, what can they do?
Oh, no, because the supplements, and again, if you're working with an NTP, I don't have your list of supplements in front of me, but primarily, right, all of the supplements we use are just nutrients. They're stuff that exists in food anyway. We're just having, and we always, always shoot to get those nutrients from our food first. But there are lots of reasons why we don't get enough of those nutrients, so we supplement with them. Many of our supplements, though, we consider just a kickstart, just a way to get the body back into its natural state. And then if we can eat a good enough diet, we can eliminate the supplements. But I would rather see somebody stay on these supplements if they can't get those nutrients from their diet, and they're not going to hurt you.
All right. So this fit test you were talking about, I think that's what I need to do next. I want to find out what my allergens actually are. Do you have any recommendations as to an outfit that would do that to me?
Yeah, we actually offer it. So we sell the kit right on our website, and then we will go over the results with you. So you could certainly look up, food sensitivity testing and compare some of the other stuff on the market. We're competitively priced, and with us, you're going to get...
I'll just invest in that, and I'll go to your site and check it out and make my determination there. Hey, thanks for your time, man. You're great.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's keep going. Let's head off to Tennessee. George, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. My question is real quick. I got very high blood pressure, and last night I did this square breathing and lay down for 15 minutes, and my top number went down by 35.
Wow. Now, that's awesome.
Until I get home in a few hours and get my fit test done, I'm on the go plan. I know a few weeks ago you was talking about meditations on an app you can do for like 10 minutes a day to 30 minutes a day.
Yeah.
Can you give me a name of one I can do until we can do our 101?
Yeah. The one I really like, if you go to the, do you have an iPhone or an Android?
iPhone.
If you go to the App Store and look up concentration, and the way this app works is when you buy the app, actually the app might even be free, I forget. You get one module. So the way this works is it's basically a hypnosis app. So the first 10 minutes, that's their short session, and then they have a longer session. It's just designed to put you into the hypnotic state, which is very relaxing. So it works a lot like meditation. It's very good for your blood pressure, for your adrenals. And after the 10 minutes, you could quit if you want. It's achieved that part of the goal. But then the other thing we know about hypnosis is during the hypnosis session, what the hypnotherapist says can influence our behavior. So it's basically talking to our subconscious, and it's been very well documented that you can quit smoking, lose weight, improve. I mean, you can fix all kinds of things because we're addressing behaviors. So the app is, you can keep adding modules to it. Like there are modules to help you sleep better and to help you lose weight and improve your relationships and on and on and on. So, you know, the first 10 minutes gets you into the relaxed state. The next 20 minutes or so addresses whatever issue you bought in those modules, and you can just keep adding modules. But the part of the big benefit I see is just that first 10 minutes is so relaxing that it's just really good for adrenal fatigue and high blood pressure and so many other things.
Okay, that sounds good. That was called concentration?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it, Kevin. You have a great holiday weekend.
All right, you too. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to... we are going to Arkansas. Elwin, welcome to the program.
Yeah, how are you doing today?
Doing good. What can I help you with?
I have a question about blood clogging. Apparently, there's been some new research. But anyway, I've got three stents, just went through another one. And they're really worried about genetic problems with that. All my life, my blood has clogged extremely fast. And the new research has shown that that's a genetic issue, and the blood will even clog in your body, even if you have, like, I have no problems with cholesterol or anything like that. And I wonder if you heard anything about it. I know my mother died from a heart attack from that, and my dad died from a heart attack from that, and two of his brothers died for the same reason. So that's what they're coming up with, and I know if I get away from any of the aspirin and stuff like that, I can end up in problems real quick.
Well, the thing we found out about genetics is that there was a time, a very long time, that we thought that genetics would unlock all of the answers to all of our health problems. You don't hear that much anymore because we figured out that, first off, we're not very complicated genetically. not even close. We thought we would be the most complicated animal on the planet when it came to genetics, and we were so wrong. There are worms that have more complicated genomes than we have. We are really very, very simple when it comes to genetics. And not only that, our genetics are not fixed. They can be changed. We have genes that can be what's called expressed, either turned on or turned off. And that happens exclusively because of our lifestyle and diet. The foods we eat, the way we live, the things we do will either turn those genes on or off. So even when we say this health problem has been linked to this gene and it's genetic, it still has a huge factor in our diet and our lifestyle because we can turn those genes on and off. Now what we're learning is that we are genetically complicated, very, very genetically complicated, but they're not our genes. Our genes, our human genes, are very simple. The complication is in our gut bacteria. That's 99% of our genetic material isn't even human. It's bacteria. And that's how we're complicated. Now, the interesting thing there is we can change those genes in a matter of days. We can radically change our gut bacteria in days. And when we change the gut bacteria, we change our genetics. This is brand new. And this is, in a lot of ways, really exciting because we now know we have a lot more control. Now, gut bacteria almost exclusively is diet. So when we say these things are genetic, they're more genetic because we tend to share diets with our ancestors. So you find people that they'll say, well, you know, my whole family is fat. Well, you can blame that on genetics if you want, but if you look at the research, most families that are overweight have pets that are overweight. Well, that's clearly not genetics. It's lifestyle. So genetics, we just should not lean heavily on genetics and say, well, this is caused by genetics. It's really not. And even the genes that could be causing it, we can change. And just like almost everybody else I talk to, it comes down to diet first. Get the diet clean, and many of these problems will start to resolve themselves. So that's number
one. I eat a lot of diet and everything else. We're at my son, I eat a lot more vegetables and clean the bread up and everything else. And I've been doing that not perfectly, but for the last 3 or 4 years. And I just had another clock come back.
We're out of time. This would be a case where you really need to work with somebody, not the traditional medical community. They'll lead you down the wrong path on this. I would find a naturopath, a functional medicine doctor, an NTP. I would work with somebody directly because diet is still going to be your number one fix for this problem. And it can be fixed. With that, I'm all out of time. We will see you next time. Thanks for joining me. I'm Kevin Ruff. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.